The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 6th of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Gfinity, ECR Minerals, On the Beach. Also, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. You can check out both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll all see a lot of content out there. There's some news on i3 Energy. There's other news on Conceptor. And there's, of course, opening market report. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. And COVID-19 Index. These are stocks that may do well during lockdown and beyond because they're looking for some kind of solution to the virus, or the industry or business model has been helped and accelerated the trend. And for example, top riser today is Gfinity. I did a video on them the weekend. They're up 20%, 2.3%. Biggest fall of the day is Fusion Antibodies. Fab is ticker there, down 14%. And you can check that COVID-19 index out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Jural.
How are you today?
Oh, well, you dipped out there, Al. Are you still there? Have you overdosed?
Yeah, I'm here.
Have you overdosed on Super Saturday or something? Did you go out?
No, I haven't actually. I didn't head out to the pub at all. It's just not. I think I'm going to be happy to go to the pub. There's a very good pub near us called the Plough and Harrow, and they do great food there. And it's nice to go and sit outside on a warm summer's afternoon. So I think had you gone anywhere this weekend, it would just have been chaos.
I went somewhere. Listen, I went to our local sort of. It sounds like a similar kind of pub. It's more food orientated, and it's the farm. House is called, and we've done very well. It was like all very organized to walk in one way, they take you to your seat, table service, or via the app. And so you don't get to mingle with people at all, which I quite like. I'm very unsociable. If I'm going to be sociable, I like to do it in an unsociable way. I mean, one of my bugbears is literally queuing three deep at the bar. I hate that. If someone can serve me at the table when I'm going out, I quite like that. So we did that. And there's something like, you know, the traditional sort of nice wooden benches in pubs. They had that, but almost like a pod built around them, which was very good. And so it's lovely. I mean, we're two friends. Me and my wife sat opposite each other. So if we're going to talk loudly and spit at each other, be on each other. But it was done very, socially distanced. I mean, once I come across another guy in the toilets, but we just stepped beside each other. So that's about it. But it's done well. And because of that, I drank too much, I think.
Good. Well, that's good, and it's good to hear that the place you were at had basically got everything in place and was organised. I mean, I don't know to what extent pubs have gone to get stuff organised. I guess most of them will have, particularly the popular ones. But there will still be some old drinking houses, which I'm sure it's just they're just open for business, and then you go and you stand at the bar and take a risk. But I think we will head out to a place probably in the next few weekends for sure.
Yeah, I think most pubs are like that, that I just described. Most pubs are doing it like that. And then you get London, which is a bit different, Soho, of course. But we saw pictures of that. And what I hate about the media is they never actually show the majority. The majority of these restaurants and pubs and bars were doing it like I was experiencing it.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
well done, very well organised, small businesses doing it properly. And then you get Soho, which is a little different. But even so, most of the people are outside there. They seem to have table service a lot of the time. You take a camera shot taken down a street of 100 yards. The perspective is all wrong. It makes everyone look close together. When actually, if you go amongst them properly, there's probably at least a metre or two distance. So, I don't like public transport getting there to central London. one, unless you live there, it's an issue, I know. But I think the media do sort of stoke it up a bit, you know?
Oh, they do. They do, for sure. And the thing is, you know, they're just looking for an opportunity to portray, you know, Britain back in the pub, you know, oh, in trouble again, you know, absolutely, you know, smashed, had too many. And actually, no, it's just people having a good time. And it's the perspective of the camera that makes them appear closer together than it is. I'm sure the vast majority of people were law-abiding and had a great time. So, long way lost. Good.
Right. What stocks are you talking about?
Okay, so I've got three stocks I want to talk about. Just we can start, I think, with Gfinity. I think I think we just discussed this briefly last week. And
did we mention it? I don't know if we did, but I said have a look at them because it's a turnaround story. And like with all turnaround stories, right? You know, people are behind the curve, and it takes a long while. So many stocks to, you know, to research. Obviously, you can't be over them all. But I've had John on the podcast, and literally since he's come in, he's transformed the margins from literally 15% to over 50%, close to 60%. And Gfinity, of course, is in a hot space, but for years they've just burned cash, you know, and I've liked them. I thought, unless they start making money, I'm not going to be interested because they're burning lots of cash. And so the guy has come in, John. He came in as head of commercial a while back, and brand, and now he's CEO. They've kicked the board, the board out, and he's doing the right thing. He's aiming for, you know, break-even this year, profitability next year. He's monetizing lots of stuff they didn't do before, and he's doing the right thing. And I think it's a turnaround story in a hot space, you know?
It is. Absolutely. Well, I took a good look at the company sort of over the weekend. And I mean, esports is absolutely huge. And the thing is, I'm not into gaming. I dig the technology. I understand there's a huge audience there, 2.2 billion gamers worldwide. And it's quite interesting, actually, the difference between a million and a billion. And I think there's somebody mentioned this to me over the weekend, which really puts it in perspective, you know. Just how many people that entails. So a million seconds just is basically 11 days. Yeah. A billion seconds is 32 years.
A trillion seconds are, you mean? Yeah.
No. A billion seconds is 32 years. That's the difference between a million and a billion.
No, a trillion is 31 years. 31,000, sorry. You're right. A trillion is 31,000 years.
31,000 years. Yeah. That's right. A billion is 32 years. So that's just the difference between a million and a billion. So 2.2 billion gamers. That's a massive.
And it's still
massive
going though. Have you seen the esports business that? It's like the esports business is not as big as that. But they reckon it'll double in the next 3 years. It's a 24.4% compound annual growth of esports. And COVID has really alerted companies and brands saying I just tweeted something out today. But brands are now approaching. In fact, John from Gfinity, we're getting a lot more brands approaching us, so we want connection with the gamers because that's a growing sport. Even David Beckham invested last week and all this stuff. It's a very hot area and it's only growing, you know.
It's massive. And of course, Gfinity have a programmatic advertising partnership with Vernatus and Bidstack, of course, who are in this space too. But I mean, just looking down at the number of partnerships announced this year, partnership with Viacom, the company also raised $2.25 million in a placing earlier on this year, the eCricket Challenge, ePremier League, BT Sport partnership, multi-year agreement with Formula One, virtual Formula One, a virtual racing partnership. And it's this growth is just exponential. So
well, the thing is, still, they've always had the revenue, right? They've always had good partnerships, but because they're in a hot space, the previous board just spent a lot of money, and now John said, no, we can't keep doing this. We've got to cut down. So he's cutting down the low margin stuff, which is very good. So the revenue may dip a little bit, the profitability will go up, and you know you can't keep burning the kind of money they were. And John is the man. Has come in and said, right, no, we've got the revenue, we're in the hot space. Let's start making this a profitable business. And I just think in this space, as a profitable business, it'll be multiples. It's up today, of course, 25% or something. But it was like sub. When I started, I bought some shares in it. It was like 13 million market cap. I thought, how is that so low in this area? It's like, you know, with all those connections and all those contracts. And you realise it was the management focusing on the wrong thing. But now John is John Clark. Clark, he's the man to come in and sort it out.
Well, I actually think the previous management had started to make a difference, because the December 31 interims, obviously this is pre John Clark, the gross profit had grown 300% to 2 million.
No, but he was the commercial manager, commercial director.
He was in there helping to drive for sure. Yeah, no, I see that, and of course the company have raised money, so they've got plenty of cash at the bank at the moment. But as you say, his drive, his focus is on break even this year. And this is a really exciting era. They have Gfinity TV, which is an online TV player. They have Gfinity Tournament. They also have offline events, which usually take place at the Esports Arena in Fulham. And this is just a huge burgeoning marketplace, which I think has really come into focus through the lockdown. I think it's got a very exciting future. I mean, personally, on a personal level, I just haven't got involved in gaming at all. It's obviously the generation, the game after
we're
me.
All but, men, we're all men, CL. That's true. I've got two young kids, so I can see what they're like. They just listen. All they want to do, this is their lives. All they want to do, have to restrict their hours on Fortnite. If they're not playing Fortnite, they basically want to watch someone playing Fortnite on YouTube. There's other esports. While they're looking at, but I don't know if you looked. So Gfinity, John's announced a new strategy, three areas essentially they're going to be looking at. They're going to focus on esports, because they were just a service company providing services to the big brand rights, sports rights holders, and just charging them a service charge. It's okay, it's high revenue, the margins are okay, but you've got to own your own stuff, you've got to have your own IP, and that's what they're realizing they're focusing on now. And so they've gone from, they're going to focus on motorsports because they have a priority technology called race control, which is adjudication, and it can accurately measure people from around the world, doing lap speeds, and it's spot on, and it's a standard basically in esports. They're going to use that and leverage that, and so they'll charge more for putting on events, esports events. They've also got their own community sites. These sites they've gone from 6,500 views a year ago to 5,500 views a year ago to now over 6 million views this year. They're going to start to monetize those. That wasn't even monetized before. And they're also going to JVs. I don't know if you saw that JV with the Abu Dhabi Motorsports Management, and I didn't know who these were. And you realize the Middle East, when they do things, when they decide to go into something, they do it big, and they don't mess around. Like, if you look at the building of Dubai, it was like 40 years ago, it was like a tiny fishing village in a desert. It was nothing. And now it's one of the biggest, most thriving cities in the world. And if you look at Abu Dhabi, and I've been to Dubai quite a few times on holidays, people said to me, you should go to Abu Dhabi. Because if you look at this, Abu Dhabi Motorsports Management, ADMM, who Gfinity's last deal was with, they've gone into a joint venture. And this means it's not just putting on an event for them for a service for a one-off fee. This is recurring revenue, because they'll get money from sponsorship, from advertising, and all the rights to go with it. And if you look, Abu Dhabi Motorsports Management are based on Yas Island. I've never heard of Yas Island. I looked it up, and it's where the Formula One Abu Dhabi sort of Grand Prix is. And it's a $40 billion dollar leisure and entertainment world. It was named the best in 2009 by the World Tourism Projects. Ferrari World Theme Park there, featuring the world's fastest roller coaster, Warner Brothers' biggest indoor theme park, home to Formula One Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And that's where the Abu Dhabi Motorsports Management are. They put on 400 events a year in there, and they've hooked up with Gfinity. And right, this is going to be very big. And Gfinity, this is the first of many sort of hookups we're doing in the Middle East and all that stuff. So, and they're also talking with people in the Far East. So it's very exciting to start. I think, they've split it down to three areas where they're going to be most effective in Gfinity, and it's very good. If you look at a picture, look at Yas Island and look at it. It's fabulous. It's literally got a marina, a Grand Prix track, Ferrari sort of area. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I've never even heard of it.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think at every level, and of course, they've also got an esports partnership with Yala, which is the Middle East and Far East too. So they're literally going global with this, and I just think they're set for exponential growth, because they've exploded into this area, but that they've, if you like, been turbocharged during the lockdown period because of the attention and focus on it. But with this audience to go after, I mean, they're potentially in a very strong position indeed. And I know we spoke about them last week. I am going to jump in and get some of these. I've just freed up some cash in my SIP, so I'm going to jump in and take a part.
It's had a pop today. I mean, you know, it'll settle down. But I'm focusing on companies investing wise that be generating real value. But that would mean they're actually generating cash, and this company will be, you know, Q1 next year. So that's Acid Growth. It's not a pop and drop sort of stock that you know, promises in the future, jam tomorrow kind of stock. It's happening very soon, and they're in the right sector, and they're not very highly valued either.
Indeed.
Anything else, Al? What's happening there?
Okay, so wanted to touch on ECR Minerals. We've spoken about ECR Minerals in the past, of course. ECR is the epic code. Now, I put out a text over the weekend, or a tweet over the weekend, just to say that I believe they're on the cusp of a major re-rating, and I'll explain why. They've when they announced their half-year results last week, the company said that Victoria, Australia is continuing to enjoy a gold exploration boom and interest from third parties in its projects. Victoria, several discussions are taking place in respect of commercial transactions over Bayliston and Krasik projects. Now, these are progressing. I know this for a fact. The company have also basically kicked the rest of their portfolio into shape. So they have offloaded Avoca, Timor and Moranbah gold projects, which are also in the region, to Fosterville South Exploration. And Fosterville is a TSX listed company. The shares absolutely exploded when that happened. But the reason this is so exciting is that Bayliston is quite close to the Fosterville gold mine, which is owned by Kirtland Lake Gold, and this produces huge amounts of gold every year. The Australian mining giant Newmont Mining has applied for a license area adjacent to the Bayliston territory, and this obviously is quite telling because the geology in that region is very rich, and that also rolls down further south into the Krasik project, which is the Krasik National Park, which is close to the Ballarat gold mine, which is also producing. Now, ECR owns both of these projects 100%. So that's highly significant, and we know they're in discussions right now in regard to commercial transactions. So the company is currently worth $6 million. We all know what's happening with the gold price at the moment. We all know what's going to happen longer term with the gold price, simply because the amount of financial stimulus going into the markets around the world at the moment is effectively going to devalue fiat currency. So tangible assets like gold, like other precious metals, like platinum, like silver, and probably like commodities such as iron ore, such as lithium, such as copper, these are all going to increase in value. But I think the focus obviously right now is on gold, and I think there's been lots of discussion about how to best expose yourself to gold. You can buy the physical asset, of course, and hold it, but there are a number of companies around that do own high quality assets, and given the activity that's already in this region, if you actually look at the geography of the region, see how close Bayliston is to Fosterville gold mine and how close Krasik is to the Ballarat gold mine, and also the amount of other gold mines that are operating and producing in that area, I think ECR are on the cusp of a major re-rate and potentially at a very exciting juncture.
It's always good to have an exposure to gold, especially in this time. I don't know. Sometimes I think explorers, it's about market cap, isn't it? Sometimes the explorers will move faster because they're smaller, I suppose. But if you want to, I suppose, producing company, there's there's Hummingbird, there's Cora, I'm not get producing, but they're closer, they're obviously linked with Hummingbird. That's a smaller cap. Yep. I can't think of any bigger ones. I'm not in the big space, but I haven't got any gold exposure at the moment. Have you?
Yes, I have. I have shares in ECR.
Oh, there we are. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so there we go. I do own shares in the company, so I've declared my hand there.
So what's the next big milestone? You're saying what's the next big? I mean, they've popped up the last couple of days, haven't they? What's happening here? I mean,
well, Well, they popped up on Friday. They're ahead just under 10% today. But, I mean, that's still on a market cap of 6 million. They own these projects 100%. And if there's a – they can either raise the money and basically mine the gold themselves, or they can get farming partners. And the amount of activity in that area – if you just basically look at a map of the area and look at the amount of gold mines and the active gold mines in that area, I'm certain they're going to do some sort of farming deal, some sort of deal with one of the bigger players in there. And because Newmont are adjacent to Baylisten, it would make sense that possibly they have a chat with Newmont about it. And those conversations, I'm sure, will take place at some time. So, I think where just... With everything coming together, with the gold price, with the level of activity in that region, and where ECR are right now, I think they are on the cusp of a major re-rate. But
that's opinion. It's supposition, isn't it?
Of course, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Right. I mean, it popped up. When did you buy them then? It popped up recently, the last couple of days. So, are you in profit now, or what?
Oh yeah. No. I've had ECR shares for a while. I mean, I've known the company management there for a while, and just looking at the way they've run the business, they're also their cash position, because they sold the Avoca Timor and Morbil licenses. They've got a potential earning to those licenses up to $2.5 million. Ditto with the SLM project in Argentina. So they've got $750,000 cash in the bank. So the company are well cashed up. They've got plenty of money for certainly for at least a year. But of course, if they do actually mine it themselves, they will need to raise more money to do that. But my bet is on some sort of a farm end deal or a joint venture with one of the bigger players.
Okay, so it's a bet.
Sorry,
is it a bet?
No, it's not a bet. But they've already said. Well, if you read the results announcement from last week, discussions are taking place in respect of commercial potential transactions over Baylisten and Creswick. So okay, they're already taking place.
Marvellous. Do you think that's the reason for the rise? Is that the reason for the rise? Is it? Because people are assuming it's a done deal, pretty much. Is that what's happening?
I would imagine, but also I think a lot of people have studied the results and seen that ECR has no debt, it has plenty of money in the bank, and it has these assets, and discussions are taking place. If they own the projects 100%, that's Baylisten and Creswick, and if anything happens on either one, I'm sure that we're going to see the company's worth 6 million. So, I think how much is gold mine worth? You're sort of talking operators in the area that are worth millions. Newmont Mining is worth several billion. So,
the potential of mines are getting worth more, aren't they? Because the gold price is going up. So that's why.
Absolutely.
Cool. Right. Anything else, Al?
Just a bit of a left field play, but we spoke about this beforehand. I know you've owned these shares before, Jess. Interesting note last week from a company called Atlantic Capital Markets on the Beach Group. And on the Beach announced results last week. Clearly, given the hit from COVID, the results and the numbers were hit. But I think there's an underlying trend there that's worth taking note of. So the interim results to the 31st of March. The company said it was trading well for the first 4 months. By the way, the epicode is OTB. For those that will be taking a look, and the shares have traded as high as £5 on the year and as low as £1.12. Currently trading at 2.84. So the total holiday sales grew 29% regardless, but of course with the collapse of Thomas Cook that you and I have discussed just previously, first half revenues fell due to COVID-related cancellations and pre-tax fell, but the company has cash in the bank as a result of a successful share placing on the 22nd of May, and it also has further facilities it can tap into. So the company has cash in the bank. The Thomas Cook collapse drove record levels of brand awareness and sales, but the company, because of its innovative business model, its low costs, It's an online model, as I'm sure you know, compared to the conventional holiday operator model, which has the branches and the airlines and all those associated costs. And the board are very confident going forward. From a technical standpoint, the charting picture looks quite interesting. The stock came back after the cliff fall, the COVID cliff fall in March or late February, and it's come back. And what Atlantic said was, from charting wise, the 50-day moving average is currently tracking along at about £2.80, provided it holds on to that, which it's done so really since the recovery. It expects the shares to push on and push closer to the 200-day moving average, which is currently £3.58. And I just think, okay, we are starting to move now. We are, you know, there are expectations that Brits are going to pick up the phone or go online and book holidays. And I would imagine OTB are in a very strong position to be able to capture a lot of that business. And we're seeing already with a lot of businesses, you know, they're reporting an unprecedented rush in sales. So we could see that the fall in sales being filled during quarter three and quarter four for on the beach. And of course, if it does, then you know a decent share price rise could be in prospect. But contrarian trade, but if you're going to back any company in travel and holidays to recover, I think this is the one.
I did start buying on the beach. I had them on my watch list for a while because they're a good growth stock, and I was looking at mid-cap growth stocks. And then we had the COVID thing and it just dropped off. And I started buying on the way down, but it started going down further and further. But I did average down and it bounced back up and then I got out to a small profit. But it's one to watch. And I think there'd be more opportunity because it does fly on good news. But I just think at the moment we're still really patchy on holidays. We've got a holiday booked, right, for Tenerife. And apparently, as yet, though, this is the problem. As yet, they're still saying you have to wear a mask in the hotel. You have to wear a mask on the pool. What? I'll cancel that. I don't want to wear a mask on the pool. I mean, I don't want to come back with a massive white sort of,
patch
around my mouth like that and just a tan forehead. So I'll just cancel if that's going to happen. Because if that's the state of the market, I can't seem to get many bookings. So hopefully Lee's, but I think there'll be opportunity here to buy this company because it's a capital-light model. You know, it's... they don't get affected by book cancellation so much. Obviously, they don't have to refund because it goes to the actual tour operator, but so they're a margin player. But, yeah, it does tend to fly on good news, and they operate well. I was very impressed by the updates throughout this COVID-19. They're very upfront and transparent, so I like them.
Yeah, right.
It's just the moment, I think, there'll be other dips. We don't really know what the market's like at the moment, do we? You know, it's a bit dodgy.
That note, by the way, if you want to read the full note, it's on the Atlantic Capital Markets website. So I think it's under the press section, or the research section. But it's worth reading. But I think another area, and this is an area that I'm not sure which PLCs operate motorhomes, but I think there's going to be huge boom in motorhome travel over the next few years. Because if you think about it, if you'll take your family away, or it's just a two of you, you can jump in the motorhome, get your campsite, plug in. You don't need to interact with anyone. You can drive it sort of down through France, Spain, Germany, wherever you want to go, and you're still by yourself. So I think there's going to be a big boom in motorhome sales and holidays in the next few years. So any PLCs that operate motorhomes, that's a potential growth stock.
Yeah, another one it's hard to get exposure to because this small business, one-man-owned things. There's been a massive... I know there's been a boom because we've booked one campsite long weekend. But they're sold out because obviously the shorter sort of season and people trying to get away, at least from the house, campsites are booked up, fully booked up. So they'll recover some of their losses because I heard someone explain that during the winter months, basically they invest money into the site, spend money, you know, ready for summer months. And they said, trouble is, if we don't open for summer, we basically had two winters back to back. We can't afford that because we recoup our investment during the summer of what we spent in the winter. Mm. If we can't do that, then literally it's going to cost us a lot of money, you know. So hopefully it's a shortened season, but hopefully they can, you know, have fully booked status for the next couple of months. But yeah, there's opportunity there. And I say to everyone, if you can, if you know of a campsite that's nice and you can find a space, book it and get down there for a couple of nights, because it'll support, you know, local economy, I think, you know, and pubs as well. Worth doing, worth going.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
local farmers, local
so.
Sort of eateries and farmers, because they need it, desperately need it. And, you know, put money in the economy, it just helps, doesn't it? Everything helps.
Well, I think with campsites in particular, if they can offer sort of pitches for motorhomes, then motorhomes tend to be an all year round thing. We've got friends that have a motorhome and they just literally go away every weekend, come rain or shine, because they can just go somewhere, plug in. You've got your pitch there, you've got your electricity and water and showers and all the rest of it. Or you've got your shower in the motorhome too. But again, it's all the year round. So I think a lot of campsites may look to that, because. I think that's a growth market anyway. But so any PLC out there looking for a business model, why not go up and buy a load of mobile home operators and hire companies, and away you go.
Marvel stuff. All right, thanks for that. Do your research, everyone. And we'll speak you next week, Yali.
Speak you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Arena Events, up 27.45% to 6.5 pence. At four, Polarian Imaging, up 3% to 33 pence. That's POLX. Of course, covered them on the weekend in the video. At two, Boohoo.com. They were responding to reports of modern slavery in the Sunday papers. So they're down 16.75% to 3.23. At two, Longboat Energy, up 4% to 98 pence. And at one, it's Gfinity, up 20% at 2.3 pence. Of course, covered them on the weekend in a video and just chatted with them on the podcast. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Mobile Streams. Mobile Streams launching a software as a service inside platform. At four, Sound Energy. Eastern Morocco update, annual exploration permit. At three, Rockrose Energy. Recommended cash offer of Rockrose. At two, Thor Mining. Molly Hill awarded to major project status. And at one, Cora Gold, H1 2020 Regional Exploration Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.